Hey, and welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature Interviews. Today I have a fabulous film, Six Ways to Die. Matt Campagna is in the house, and he's writer, director, probably everything. He'll get into it. Welcome to the show.
Extra Feature.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Simon Watson.
So let's start with something really easy for you to start off with, just to loosen this up. Why a Western? I mean...
Well, good question. I was essentially raised in a barn. My mom and my dad both loved horses. And as a working class kid, it meant that I was going to be playing in the barn while they were enjoying the horses. So, I just kind of got used to being around all the trappings of the Western. I was also raised in a funny, weird little Canadian town that had like demolition derbies, and I learned how to binder twine a lasso when I was like 8. So all these things were always kind of a part of my life. And then I found out about the spaghetti Western when I watched my first Sergio Leone film, and I just thought, oh, give me more of this. And I just adored Sergio Leone's work. And then, you know, as I was getting into more and more filmmaking, it was a genre that I saw not being done all that often in a way that felt new. I would see, you know, every 10 years, there'd be a huge, important Western that also took place in Wyoming in 1888. And I was like, okay, yeah, I've seen this. And so what I wanted was to take all the stuff I love about a Western, the hats, the horses, the guns, the lawlessness, and jumble it up and throw it into the post-apocalypse where anybody could be the person with the man on the lamb story. It doesn't have to be someone who looks just like Clint Eastwood. And I just really loved the freedom of that.
Okay, so you wanted your actors just to be anybody you wanted. You didn't care who it was. You just wanted X, I guess, is his way I can explain it. So you got your lead.
Yeah.
And, I mean, your leads do not look like leads, let's be honest. Western leads. And that's fine.
Not at all.
I accept that in any film. If that's what you want for your film, I'm going to enjoy it. So is that what we're going for? You're like, where did you find the people then? So you just picked your friends.
Well, it's funny because this particular film, we started shooting in August of 2020. Which everyone might remember was a difficult time to make a movie because a pandemic had been declared just like minutes before. And so we basically wanted to make a film with people that we knew could safely bubble together. This was before vaccines, before tests were even widespread. So what we wanted to do was make sure the people who were going to be on camera at the same time, in the same room, breathing the same air, we were comfortable with who they were and they were comfortable with each other. So one of the leads, the marshal, is my wife. She's also the dialogue director, which is to say she is every single actor's scene partner because we shot almost every one of these actors one actor at a time.
I was going to get there, but good. Glad you brought it up now.
So that's part of the recipe that we were working with. Our male lead, Daryl Hines, he and his wife, who plays the woman in red, they, of course, are bubbled. And so a lot of these sets just started to build themselves. And so these matched pairs that, you know, there's a scene in the movie that has like 20 people in a bar. Almost none of those people have ever met each other. They were not shot together, all shot separately. But, you know, every now and again, you want the illusion of, to sell the illusion, you need someone's hand on someone's shoulder. You know, you feel like those two people in the same room. You see a handshake, things like that. And so we needed to make sure that we had some matched sets of people who could be in the same room together. And that's how we were able to sell some of those illusions. So the cast sort of came together like a jigsaw puzzle.
Okay, I want to back up a tiny bit. Okay, just so everybody knows, maybe we should bring this up ahead of time. It's all shot against a green screen. It's pretty evident it is. I don't think I'm ruining anything, but I want to go back to a little bit what you said earlier. You grew up on a farm, so did you not have access to this? I mean, I think this could work out in the real world.
Oh, well, the funny thing is I shot in 2006 a Western in Alberta, just six guys driving in a van to the middle of the Badlands, and we shot a straight up Western. Okay. And it was a post-apocalyptic Western as well. We wanted it to feel like an untamed alien wilderness, because this all happens after some like unexplained apocalyptic event. So the Badlands in Alberta, the hoodoos there, they give you this really alien, something went wrong here kind of vibe. And so when we had that feeling in a film called Six Reasons Why, and I knew that I was going to be able to shoot something like this, but not with the actors being together, I have a background in visual effects. And so okay. I just immediately put together, why don't I make an imaginary world that I can actually imagine? Uh-huh. And so I reached out to a digital map painter whose work I loved in Scott Pilgrim. And he and I were able to build what we called panoramas, yeah, which were 360 degree map paintings of a, you know, Airstream trailer in the middle of the Grand Canyon, which I could put an Airstream trailer in a giant canyon, but I could also just put an actor in a green screen and have it painted. And yes, then the next day I'd be able to be in a bar. And correct, then the next day I'd be able to be inside that Airstream. Like, it just gave me so much freedom. And I was trying to shoot this thing in 20 days without anybody coming down with anything that could be COVID. So if there was a moment where somebody was like, I got pink eye, that could be COVID. I have the sniffles, that could be COVID. And at that time, if you had the slightest symptom, you weren't coming in that day. So I had to build a jigsaw puzzle that I could then rearrange on the fly in those 20 days. So there were times where I thought I knew what I was going to shoot tomorrow. I woke up, that actor can't come in. Okay, we're shooting something else. And luckily my wife was playing one of the leads. So we would move one of her days up, shuffle things around, and we would do it on a moment's notice. So I could have shot it out in the real world, but I would have probably not been able to make my schedule work.
Okay. I want to go back a bit more to what you just told me. Do you have this all laid out? Like, I mean, obviously you know the script inside out. I'm not saying that. And you have shooting days. So if one actor is not showing up, you can immediately jump to day six, I guess is what I'm trying to say. That wouldn't be a
pretty
problem.
Much. Yeah, what I wound up doing in order to prepare for this film is more paperwork than I've ever put into it.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, I had to not just shot list the whole thing. I had to storyboard the entire thing and break out elements for a way to build a schedule that was efficient. If I was bringing an actor in for 4 hours who was going to show up in six scenes, I would need to shoot, you know, each lighting setup with a few different props around them, because this prop is going to make it look like they're in the bar, right, and this floor is going to make it look like they're standing in the middle of a main drag in a town. And so I had to have all those things lined up. Then when that actor was done, another actor would come in and we would start again, and we would be able to put all those same little Lego pieces together, but this color, the blue pieces are in now, the red pieces are in. And then eventually I have my entire mosaic of performances that I can then in the edit, take four is great for this person, take six is great for that person. And they're all in the same shot.
Yes.
So I got used to a kind of freedom I've never had as an editor, because I was able to pull out, I could make a composite take of seven actors, each giving me a different take, and make that into the one that's in the movie. I'd never been able to do that before, and I got kind of addicted.
Okay, I'm going to get there next. So good, you're leaving me down exactly where I want to go.
Great.
Heavy CGI effects. I want to know, I mean, you've told me, obviously you're familiar with this. I get that impression. I mean, you have a lot of work to do this film. How long does it take you to do each scene then? I mean, if you're taking a scene from scene six, and you're going to 4, 10... maybe day 20, you're like, oh my God, that's perfect for scene one.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, that's what I want to know. How long does that take to move all that? I know you're on a computer. I get that. But you have reams of footage. It's not like it's an hour of footage. It's 20 hours of footage.
Well, let me tell you, when it comes to capturing the scene, it simultaneously takes an hour and a week. Okay. Because I need an hour with this actor on Monday. Then I need an hour with that actor on Tuesday. And then Tuesday afternoon, I have this other actor coming in. And then on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I'm doing that same thing. So it takes all week sometimes to shoot one scene. But that's made up for by the fact that having one actor that I'm able to shoot with for an afternoon and blast through six scenes of walking through the desert, trudging through a smoke screen sandstorm. And then I'm immediately able to turn it around. I don't have to reset anything. We don't have to do a location move. And then we're shooting him walking, taking a swig out of some lemonade. Totally different moments, but I'm able to shoot them within an hour of each other.
Okay. Excuse me. Music. You do use a lot of music in this. Where did that come from? Mm-hmm.
I love working with a composer named Nick Name. I've worked with him for 15 years now. He has a love of Ennio Morricone that matches my love of Sergio Leone. So it's like this perfect little combination. And I really love giving him a canvas where he can play. And we often talk about the fact that I don't know nearly as much about music as he does. And so I ask for insane things. I'll ask him I would like every character to be represented by an instrument. And I would like every character to have a theme. And I would like for those themes and instruments to play together.
Oh,
and
he would
say that. Yeah. He'll say that can't be done. Now let's figure out how to do it.
That's
and yeah, it's a lot, but I simultaneously love what George Lucas makes John Williams do. And I love what Sergio Leone makes Ennio Morricone do. So I tried to combine them both. And so characters have leitmotifs in the film, but those motifs fit together to become a song. And that took us, God, I mean, we've been working on some of these songs since Six Reasons Why. So they're songs that have had 15 years of life at this point.
Okay.
But yeah, it took him almost as long for the sound and music as it took me for the visuals. So we each had about 3 years to get it right after we finished shooting.
Hold on. Hang on. 3 years ago, this film was finished shot. It took
we shot
3 years
yeah.
to do all the effects and everything?
Yeah, two and a half. Yeah, two and a half. It was done at the beginning of 2023, and we shot it sort of halfway through 2020. So yeah, it was a very small team. I had one matte painter. I did some of the compositing, and I had one compositor, one animator, and one visual effects supervisor working with me. So like basically five of us did this whole movie.
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot, but there's something really cool about like sitting down and building the thing in a craftsman kind of way. So it's not like you're making the pyramids and everyone's pulling like a couple of pounds and together you can move a ton. You are personally moving a ton, and it takes a while, but it goes exactly where you want it to go.
Okay. James Bond-like opening. Am I off on that one?
No, I love that. I love it. It's got a 1960s inspired opening because I love James Bond openings, and I love the opening sequence to Good, the Bad, and the Ugly and For a Few Dollars More, and that kind of just 60s pop art style. And so I laid that in with some modern textures so that it didn't feel dated, but it felt inspired, and you picked up on it. So I think I might have hit it.
I'm an old guy and watches way too much film, so it's hard to get things past me, but sometimes it happens. I did make a note of the making of the dead cowboy. And I more wanted to decide not that scene. Fine, I have no issues with the scene. I said a dead cowboy, people. I'm really spoiling the film, I know. Deciding on the colors at that point. I noticed at that point the colors explode for me. I thought you were definitely playing a lot more at this point. Before, you kind of had maybe like a red, yellow, like you weren't going nuts, and then boom, you just went ballistic. So is that when you decide to have fun?
I like to sort of draw people into the film in such a way that it starts a bit familiar, and then ideally I can ramp people into where it's going to live. So, you know, it's got a bit of an orange dusty vibe to it off the hop. And then we jump into a flashback that has some pinks in the sky, which still feel like maybe that's real. But then as soon as the opening sequence happens and the nighttime hits, that's when we realize, oh, this is a different environment than I'm expecting. And then the rest of the film continues that sort of unfamiliar, destroyed Earth vibe. But yeah, I tried to give it a gentle entry and then really cranked it up to 11.
I'll make you feel better. I really feel you're trying to steal from Hang Him High. And he goes, what do you want? I want him dead. And I really feel you're going for that vibe. And if you haven't seen that film, people, go look it up. I can't help you any more than that.
You got to check out Hang Him High. Yeah. Yeah.
And you are doing, I will give you, Good, Bad, and the Ugly is definitely here. I do see it. But I mean, I was going to let you talk about that, not me, but I do see that. I have to ask, why turnips as the food source? I mean, who likes turnips, honestly?
Well, the love-hate relationship she's got with turnips, right? Like, what child likes turnips? No, when you get older, you know, eventually you might eat them. And then this idea that the longer she deals with turnips, she has this love-hate relationship.
Well, that's what she says. She says
she's just so lonely. Yeah, I feel like at that stage in her life, she'd spent more time with a turnip than a person.
Now, I know this is a hard question. I'm going to get into it. The trailer obviously is not real, but I felt you worked on that trailer a lot to really make the insides feel real. So I'm going to have to ask, what is real about the trailer? There must be something there that I'm missing.
Yes. Okay. The trailer is one of the only places where we had a large number of physical props around people. And it's where we really wanted to bleed the reality and the imagination together.
Because when
you're in the bar, the walls are all like 10, 20 feet away. But when you're in a trailer, everything's real close. And we had a general rule of thumb in the film that if a human being touches it, that's got to be real. It's got to actually be there on the day. The floor has to be real if you're standing on the floor. The table has to be real if you're leaning on the table. The spoons, the bowls, all that stuff, it's got to actually be there. But what's out a window, if the wall is right here, that I can get away with cheating. But the wall that's right there, that wall's got to be right there. So most of that Airstream trailer is there. There's a good chunk of everything happening out the doors and the windows. All that stuff is visual effects.
Yeah, I was fine with that. I was definitely getting confused in the trailer. I'm like, I'm going to have to ask about the trailer because I don't know.
Oh, I'm glad. I'm glad that's where it started to bleed and you were like, oh, I can't even tell.
I couldn't. At that point, I was getting into the story, right? We're about halfway through at that point, maybe a little bit further. Yeah. So I'm kind of like, I'm making notes now, like heavy notes. I'm like getting confused. I'm like, I really should watch this twice, but I'm not going to. So I'm going to have to wing it a bit. But I do have these questions as you talk. Like, oh, yeah, that trailer sequence.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things I really love doing is making sure that by the time you get to the end of the movie, you think, oh, shit, I really got to watch that thing again. So absolutely. I'm glad halfway through you were already having that inkling.
Well, I didn't watch it again. So you're walking me through nicely, so I know where we are at times.
Good.
Costuming, were these reused from your first film or these brand new costumes?
Some of the elements were reused from our first films. Some of the gun belts, a lot of the guns themselves, some of the hats, some of the things that I just absolutely fell in love with and wanted to see carry forward. The hat that Ari Millen, the purveyor, wears that eventually you see on the boy is a hat that's in Six Reasons Why very deliberately. And so certain elements are there for a a person who happens to see a few of the movies in the series and then can say, "Ooh, I recognize that," but it's not essential to the viewing. It's more of an Easter egg. So there are some costumes that were from our previous films, but Vanessa Lee Wishart designed so many of those costumes herself. And she fabricated a lot of them herself as well. So there was a huge chunk of original stuff, and I gave her a few elements that I wanted to see peppered through.
Okay, I'm going to express some ignorance here. You discussed Six Reasons Why. I got that. Now you just used the word films, so in a series. So yeah. How many films have I not seen that I should have seen to get to here?
None. That's the great thing about this. Yeah, these films are all standalone. They tell their own story. Six Reasons Why was one that I did 15 years ago. And I have a new one coming out next year called Six Guns for Hire. And it's got some of the same characters, but you don't need to know where they came from.
Okay.
It's got some of the same locations, but you don't need to know their histories. It enriches the experience if you've seen all of them. But at no point do you feel like you're missing out by only being given somehow half the story.
Okay, I'm just getting a little. I do have a question about the saloon fight. You probably know what it's going to be. Mm. How long did it take you to film this? Obviously, you're filming each person individually, so that's a lot of work there.
Yeah. The saloon fight was fascinating because, you know, one of the characters that gets the most beating is a stuntman who's married to our stunt coordinator, who was the woman who beat the hell out of him. So those two were in a bubble. They were able to interact. And so that part was probably one of the easier parts to shoot from a technical perspective, because all the difficulty went into the danger of smashing a sugar glass bottle over someone's head. It became more about the technical elements of the stunt. Other elements were just sheer organization. We have a character who throws a barrel and someone else gets hit by a barrel. And then a person throws that barrel again and it hits a whole other person. In that case, me. And so there are a bunch of moments where we had to have someone interacting with someone else by way of a prop, because we couldn't have those two people together.
That's right.
So it was a lot of organizing and a lot of just spitballing how to make a fight look fun and rousing, knowing that it can't be everybody just decking each other because they're not all there. So the big trick was that mix of them. How many of them can be projectiles? How many of them have to be melee? How many of them are hand-to-hand? So it took us about a week to shoot all of that. But the bar scene was really shot with every actor, every group of actors, front to back. And then those actors were done and they were sent out. And then the next actors would come in. And so it took us a week to do it. But it's a pretty enormous sequence in the film.
Yes.
So, yeah, we worked our way through a good, like, probably 15 to 20 minutes of the movie in that week. That meant that the other 3 weeks just had to be the other, you know, 60 minutes.
Very interesting. Now, as a director, would you recommend people to do this? Like shoot all on a green screen and just put people in? Or do you think most people would say, no, this is insanity?
You know, I think you have to have the brain for it. Because some people simply don't want to direct a single actor or like two actors, knowing that that's part of the whole picture. And they just want to direct the entire tableau at once. My brain happens to compartmentalize things really easily. I love puzzles, and this really just felt like a big puzzle. So I would recommend, if it's a thing that makes it easier for you to do, do it. It's cool. If it's daunting and terrifying, my God, just take a camera and put some actors in front of it.
Okay, I was going to ask you who Beth A. Kim, your thing, but I know it's your wife now, so I don't need to ask who you thanked at the end. So are you ready for some fun questions?
Yes, fire away.
Because, I mean, I think we covered your film pretty good, and I didn't spoil a thing except for turnips.
No, pretty turnips, good. I mean, that's not bad.
First time on the show, your favorite film, please.
My absolute favorite film is Once Upon a Time in the West, Sergio Leone.
Oh, I figured that was coming. Either that or Hang 'Em High. I think you've got a problem there. Number two, one film you would recommend that has the best editing you've ever seen on green screen?
The best editing I've ever seen on green screen. I got to say, there's something really special about how Zack Snyder made 300.
Oh, he was 100%.
Right? He's under so many constraints. He's got one like blob of rock that he has to use as all of Greece. Yep. And it's an incredible feat that really made, I think, my brain at an early age start to think about how you could do something like 6 Days to Die. And I don't think if Zack Snyder had not done that film, I would have been able to quite as easily put the pieces together for 6 Days to Die. So I'd say 300.
Interesting. And last question's really easy. One film you recommend people should see, but they don't often see it.
I would say Contact.
Oh, that thing was huge for years, and now nobody even knows it. I could see you drawing things from Contact, actually. Looking at that last 15 minutes of Contact is totally you right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I adore that movie. And, man, did I have just such a crush on Jodie Foster's character as a 16-year-old boy.
Oh,
I was just, wow, what a brilliant, awesome character. And I just adore everything about Carl Sagan's journey of how it probably would go were we to interact with aliens. It would be using the universal language of math. It's really poetic.
I agree with that. Before we let you go, tell everybody where we can find your films. I know you have two now, maybe more, but...
Sure. 6 Days to Die is going to be available on all of the usual platforms, the iTunes, the Google Play, all that, but it's home. It'll be on Tubi eventually, okay. But its home is going to be highballtv.com, okay. Which is the company that commissioned the film. And so it's a platform that's like film festival movies. It's like Netflix for film festival movies, indie stuff that's a little more auteur and has what I like to call authorship behind it. The filmmakers are the ones really pushing the film. And yeah, that's where it's going to mostly live. And then a lot of my films are actually on Highball TV. So that's probably the best place to find them. 6 Days to Die is still doing a film festival run. It is doing this awesome circuit of Western festivals right now. So it just won best film at the Golden Dust Film Festival in Mexico. And next week I'm going to Tucson, Arizona for the Wild Bunch Film Festival, where it's up for like 6 Days to Die is up for like a dozen awards. So I'm thrilled with the way the community of Western lifestyle and film lovers have embraced the movie.
Cool. Well, thank you for your time and have a great evening.
Thank you so much. Same to you. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this great interview. If you'd like to help out Extra Features, please leave some feedback on Spotify, iTunes, and yes, we are on YouTube. And if you wanted to send us some money, please do so at PayPal. Thank you.